in terms of, you know, like your power base, your constituents?
That's a pretty difficult question.
I mean, you've been re-elected 3 times already,
yes,
haven't you? So that's quite a...
Yes, I think so. I've often thought about my position and the kind of power base that it was on a par with. I've always considered the shop stewards, you know, in the light of the managerial structure.
Mm.
I've always tried to create a family tree against the management's layout, as against the union's layout. Consequently, I look at Joe as being on a par with the managing director, because whereas the managing director manages the company, Joe's the convener, manages the union. He's the managing director. And as we come down through the various deputy conveners, through the senior stewards, through the deputy senior stewards, and through the shop stewards, then they pan out against the company's representatives, and we'll use that word. So, on that, I've always considered myself to be on a par with at least the manager. He's the man that I would normally deal with. I would expect respect from that level of management, and higher and lower, of course. And if they would get it back. I've never seen any point in being deliberately abusive to an individual just because you happen to hold a position. I was always brought up with manners and to be courteous. There is a need at times to be forceful and possibly to bang the table on occasion. But dealing with people, I've found that, as we're debating now, just a common sense debate, you know, in a moderate but worded voice, achieves much quickly things what you're looking for than by having an argument with an individual. Very, very briefly, I've always thought, well, if I wanted to get by the lawnmower from the bloke next door, I wouldn't walk round and poke him in the eyes and then say, can I borrow your lawnmower? I would go round and ask him, would you mind lending me your lawnmower? Nine times out of 10 he would lend it me, I would return it. And providing I returned it clean and reasonable, I could borrow it again. But if I went and was too forceful, then his natural resentment as a human being would come up and say, no, you can't. And the effect that has is that I have lost. So when I go to management, it's with a reasonable amount of courtesy involved and natural cooperation. And I've always been able to achieve much of which others have not been able to achieve, because I worked hard and seriously at building some sort of relationship between myself and the people that I have to deal with. And I believe that that was the right thing to do. That is what the literature, the guidebooks which are produced by the union suggest you do. And I worked to a position where I could practically do 99% of the things that I wanted to do and achieve them without having to resort to any form of threat or harsh words. And that benefited the members. It really did benefit the members. That in itself created a certain amount of resentment, because people become resentful or jealous, call it what you like, of that kind of relationship that I had with the manager. So that created problems for me. One couldn't deny the benefit it had for the members, but it didn't do me any good in the face of perhaps people who felt that the more forceful or the banging of the table was the way to go. But I've seen those people who bang the table, and you generally end up with a sore hand. Because when you run into people like the Edwards of this world, the banging of the table doesn't mean anything at all. In fact, the slightest loss of control in the way that a case, an argument, a reference is presented can determine its final outcome. So that when you go into these formal settings, I think it's most appropriate that you are in complete control of yourself. And even though the barbs may be fired, it's important that you maintain a steady rhythm. Because I feel that once you've lost that control, then you've lost the reference, or you've lost the case. That's my feelings. I haven't had as much politically activity as what perhaps Martin and Joe had. I've been to various different conferences outside of Planter, many of which I believe in. But I think that you have to make a decision, because this is a very involved area. Trade union is involvement. And you have to say to yourself, well, what am I prepared to put in? What can I put in? Because I have a family, I have a home, I have a wife. So you have to say, well, what am I prepared to put in? How involved am I prepared to be? Because it creates many stresses within the family. And unless the family, unless the wife is behind you, it can cause many, many frictions in family life. It can lead to the breakdown of the marriage, and it has on numerous occasions. Many marriages have failed because of the involvement of the father, shall we say, head of the household.
You get that support, do you?
I get that support. There's times where I haven't, and that my wife has felt that I've been giving too much of my time to the union, to the lads. And she's been right. Because it's very easy. People say, well, as 4 o'clock comes, I turn the key, I'm switched off, I'm going home. That does not happen. It's very few and far between that an individual can do that. That they can control it, I would agree. That they can keep it below a plane, but that they can completely turn off, I would refute. I certainly cannot.
No.
I can control it, but I cannot turn it off.
So you do a lot of work at home?
I do a lot of work at home, yes. Yes, I do.
Hmm.
It is really the only way it can be done, because you yourself have seen that with people coming in, the phones going, and you have to go here, there and everywhere. And as you walk through, people want to stop and talk to you. Well, perhaps I'm wrong, I don't know, but I tend to stop and talk to people. That delays me. And I spend an awful lot of time just doing nothing more than just trying to talk to people.
Yes.
I think that really, communication, after all, is the most essential ingredient, being able to talk to people and for them to understand what you're saying, and most and more importantly, for them to agree with what you're saying. That's not to say that you're trying to browbeat people or anything like that, but experiences over the last 7 or 8 years has been... I've experienced everything that I think you can in just the short space of time that I've been involved.
A very interesting job, this.
It is.
Do you think you'll be going back one day to the shop
floor? Oh, yes. Yes. You see, I suppose it's like the man that thinks he's the fastest gun in the West. Somewhere there's always somebody just that bit faster. And there is a shop steward on Land Rover who I hope is better than me. I want him to be better than me, because I felt that I have become good. I want him to be better, because it is only by becoming better that we can improve, our lot. So I hope at this moment there's a shop steward out there that will take over from me. Perhaps at the next elections, perhaps at the ones after that, but ultimately sometime he will take over from me, and I hope for the trade union and for the people that we represent, he will be very good. You can never put a wise head on young shoulders, but I believe that his experiencing now all that's wrong within industry at this moment, and he will learn from that. And he will learn what we ought to have, what we need, what we've got a right to expect. And he will protect it when we get it back, because as we will get it back, make no mistake, we will get back to where we was. But when we do, I hope that the responsibility that goes with that power is there, and that never again do we let it slip from our grasps through stupidity and by not accepting the responsibility that goes with that kind of power. If we can do that, then we will eventually move to a socialist sort of society. Because I believe that the majority of people in one form or another do believe in socialism. And
underneath, you mean?
Like underneath, I do believe that people believe, and there are basic ingredients to a socialist society, we all know that. The right to be educated to whatever level your abilities, natural talents enable you to be, irrespective of who you happen to be. The right for medicine, irrespective of position, wealth. You have a right to expect that. The best that begins can be given to you.
What would you think about Land Rover being taken over or becoming a private company? Which might be one of the, of course, options for the future, I would think.
Well, the government have made it clear, as far as we're concerned, they will be putting it back to private enterprise. I keep a watch on the position of Land Rover shares and other companies in the market, and I have seen them rising steadily over the last few months from 17p a share to currently 31-32p a share. The value of the company is increasing. It's been increased on the back of public money.
Yes.
I do not want to see some smart-ass private enterprise pick up Land Rover at a cheap rate and benefit by the improvements brought about by public expenditure. That's what I don't want to see. That it will happen, I think, is a fact of life. I think it will happen. I won't be happy to see that happen because of what I've just said. Because some smart ass will be able to take advantage of that. It's difficult to say as what far as the union and the organisation what effects that would have.
Yes.
It could be for the better. It could be for the worse. It's an unknown factor at this moment. Private enterprise is having a free ride at the moment. A free ride. There's everything there for them.
Yes.
Everything is in their favour. And they're taking advantage of it, there's no doubt about it. So that I think that the hiving off would become a reality. There's been one or two people named, or one or two companies named as likely buyers. Once again, that's very likely kept under close wraps down at the Houses of Parliament, and it's kept a close secret so people like ourselves don't know. So who it would be, I don't know, but we can only wait and see in respect of our organisation how it will go. There's a difference now in Land Rover and in Leyland Cars. Edwards came in and he was given a job by the government. Now, whether he did that job or not meant little to him in respect of his style of living, his way of life. He had free rein to do what he felt was necessary, and he had license to close. Given that kind of power, it is difficult to lose. And therefore he could take Leyland to the brink of destruction and destroy it and not affect himself. He is no longer there. He himself recognised that his style of management cannot continue, that can only exist for a period of time, because people can only be repressed for so long. That may be classed in years, 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years, but only for so long. He recognised that, and I think he recognised that the swing would be coming quicker than possibly he wanted it, but nonetheless it would be coming. So he got out. We have now got people in charge whose living depends on land and cars or on Land Rover. We have got people who will never get a job at the same level in the outside world. That is an advantage to us.
Yes.
When people's living becomes as much dependent on the company as ourselves, that is when
yes.
we can begin to move forward. A person investing in money, I don't mean implanting equipment, I mean investing money because he buys it.
Mm.
He then has committed himself. He would be reluctant to lose that investment. Once again, he's committed the same way as we are. So in that way, it could be an advantage to us to move to a private enterprise scene at this moment, because we could begin to build back all what we had previously. It could happen the other way, of course. It could be brought up by a consortium of people who deal with many, many companies, who, and the loss of one wouldn't be a particular hurtful to them. So, once again, we shall have to see what the future holds for us. And I think it's awfully difficult to predict. I'm confident, at the end of the day, though, that we will get back to where we was. This country will go back to a socialist attitude. I believe that they will.
Right.
And as I say, I just know that that will happen ultimately.
Yes. Now, Dave, just to go back to some sort of more mundane questions. Do you have any relatives who work at Rover?
No. Not that work at Rover. No, I never have. My father, as I've told you, worked on the railway. My mother worked at a number of different smallish firms. So that there's been no family ties.
And people don't ask you for jobs, your relatives, or...?
No, because I haven't any relatives as such in Birmingham. Most of my relatives are from Newark, from Nottingham, and from Newcastle.
The
nearest relative I've got is a cousin and an auntie in Oxford.
Yes.
So they work at Galloway. Well, they did work at Galloway, shall we say. No, he still does, of course. He still works in the stores at Cowley, so of course there wouldn't be that kind of request.
No. But it seems to be here lot, doesn't it?
Especially Land Rover, prior to its inception into Leyland cars and before that into BMC, was very much a cottage industry, a family concern. And we had complete families, the male side that is, working at the Rover. Father, son, brother, uncle, nephew, all worked here. And that in itself developed the cottage industry, the family kind, because it was families, you know, they're buried.
How do you think that affected trade unions and so industrial relations?
Well, I think it affected the trade union because it was a family thing, and we spoke about people who was brought up steeped in tradition of the trade union movement. Well, the father passed it to the son or the uncle or the brother, so that there was a background to trade unionism, and it was brought up through the children, so that it was very easy to organise. It was reasonably easy for people to come along and want to join the trade union. Obviously, we still had the battles of recognition with the company, with the management, and the various organisation alterations that we wanted for them to be... Yes, we've always had them. But by and large, people believed in the movement for a number of different reasons. Not all the same, but nonetheless, they seen the trade union as being something that they ought to participate in and which they ought to join.
Mm.
Possibly not to do anything more than swell the membership, but... Certainly they wanted to be a member of the union.
Yes, okay.
Now, you know from talking to people, that has fallen off slightly, and we're tending to get the reverse when some of the youngsters don't really see the need
No.
to be a member of a trade union. And that's a great pity, I think.
It's because, of course, I think if you can't deliver the goods, if you can't show, like, because most people here are for the money, so in the days that you could show that you improved things, you know, I think it was Hugh Scanlon who once said, you know, a shop steward is as good as last week's pay rise. And I think there's a lot in that. And nowadays there's little to show for.
That's very true.
So these young kids...
We've spoken really revolving around the traditional feelings for trade union. In reality, people, when they join the trade union, look for improvements, look for protections. And as you say, once the protections or the improvements aren't there, or are limited, then people begin to question, why am I in a union? What are they doing for me? It's very true, and when the goods aren't there, then it tends to fall off. And that's very likely, to a certain percentage basis, happening now.
Hmm.
But...
Are you scared of Tabit? Like the end of the closed shop?
Well,
if that ever came...
If you mean, am I frightened for what he represents and from what he can do, then yes, I think I would be. But as an individual, as a man, to me is nothing.
No, but I was thinking more of people actually opting out, if they had the chance.
People will opt, certain people will opt out of anything.
Hmm.
With the current position on wages, then people look at 50-52p, more really than previous, so they would say, well, here's a way of getting out of paying 52p a week, and the 52p, in relation to what I'm getting out for 52p, is more benefit to me in my pocket than get paying to the union. So people will see an opportunity of pulling out of the trade union because they're protected by law, by the Tabit bills. And yes, I anticipate that as it bites, because part of it's in already, as you know, part of Tabit legislation's in. I think that people will become more and more inclined to question 52p a week, the union dues, and to see whether or not they can get out of it. So I'm worried from that point of view. Not from any other.
No. I don't think at all.
Because
as we've seen, it isn't taken, you know.
It's not taking on. You see, the company themselves don't always believe in... They might say publicly that they don't like the closed shop, they don't like this and that, but privately they know it's worth. Because in a closed shop, it's controlled. And if it's one thing management wants, it's a controlled workforce. And they need a workforce that can be communicated with reasonably quickly, reasonably easily. We can do that.
Hmm.
We can do that.
Hmm.
They cannot. Because at the end of the day, and this is where I know that there'll always be a trade union movement, at the end of the day, people have to say, well, who is there representing me? Is it a shop steward or is it the foreman? And there can be only one answer to that.
Yes. Yeah. Now, in terms of control and so on, I mean, there haven't been many spontaneous strikes over the last couple of years, have there?
They've been few and far between. People feel let down. We've had one major dispute.
Which one was that?
That was on the introduction of the 92-page document in 79-80. And people feel that they was let down, that the top union people let them down. There's no doubt about it, general comment. And they say quite rightly, we're out on the line, we're holding the line, and all of a sudden we're having our legs cut from under us, and we have to return to work. Edwards used the sack threat very effectively. And once again, possibly the unions, instead of standing up at that time to that, tended to compromise slightly. Which people recognise. People recognise a compromise when they see it.
Oh, yes.
And they felt very let down, and then we had another another dispute over the pay. Which consequently we supported, we was out. Land Rover has always supported these kind of things. Even though it's been a cottage industry, we've supported.
When was that? A year later?
Possibly, yes, a year later. A year later. Well, probably, I think it was about 18 months later because the dispute didn't happen on the day of when they said they was going to be, or when the document was effective from. It was past that point
was
before
April,
the document.
Was
it
was
April.
Was Easter times?
Right, it was Easter. So we came out again a year later on a paying conditions deal. And he went to ICAS. It ended up down there once again. It was felt by people that
they'd come out for nothing.
We'd come out for nothing.
But isn't it the same people? I mean, I don't know at that you know about that pay offer. But didn't they vote in the ballot and again in favour of the of that? Because overwhelmingly they did, didn't they?
I mean, you're talking about this 7-1 vote that Edwards used to boast about.
Yes.
Well, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't vote for what he said? But of course the media just look at things at face value, they don't look into it. What did Edwards say? He said, do you want a job? Well, who's going to say no? Do you want a successful company? Who's going to vote no? These were the questions that he posed to people.
Yes.
And there could be only one answer. The person that wrote it was very clever. And of course people would vote yes, that is what they want. But what he didn't ask was, do you like the 92-page document? Do you like management having the sole right to determine what and when they do to you? He didn't ask those sort of questions because he would have got a no vote. But he asked the right questions and got a yes vote. And he was able to use that 7-1 in favour as propaganda, most successfully, of course. But people still the shop floor still recognise what it was all about, and they recognise that the ballot really wasn't a true reflection of their feelings at that time. It wasn't. There was no way. Mm. Otherwise, how did we have a dispute 12 months later?
Mm.
Or 6 months later?
Yes.
We still had a dispute. We still had Leyland plants on strike.
And that strike had a bad effect here, didn't it? Because some people didn't come out immediately, wasn't it? It was very
on the initial dispute, 26,000 workers went on strike as against the 120 that was employed by Leyland. And there was a lot of disappointment that these plans didn't act with us. They had got their own reasons, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But we toured these plans whilst we was on strike. We went to Longbridge, Calais, to others, to talk to the works committees there, for one thing only, to engender support. And from a position where 10,000 was on strike, because we was the only plant.
Yes.
Jack and other plants went on strike, Common Line. We moved from 10 to 26,000 in a very short space of time. But we didn't get the big plants.
Mm.
We didn't get the big plants. They adopted what I thought was an unrealistic approach. They said, well, we will fight and take issue as the document is introduced. Well, of course, the issue wasn't about that. The issue was that Edwards was saying that your contract of employment would be the 92-page document, and anybody returning to work or working past that point will have deemed to have accepted it. So the thing was, there was no way you could fight it. In retrospect, it had to before its introduction. To work past that point is indicated from we checked out the legal position, and from a legal position, once you work past, you will have deemed to have accepted your new contract of employment, so that Longbridge could do what it likes at the end of the day, but Edwards would sit for knowing that he would have won. So I felt that was wrong, but of course they did. What they did at that particular time.
Yes. Now many, people who came back, they were branched after that, weren't they?
Well, obviously we had a number of people who crossed the picket lines, who broke the fence to get in.
Yes.
You have these sort of people.
Yes.
We've spoken about trade unionism, about people who believe, but you always get the people who don't believe or partially believe. So they tried to, they decrossed the picket lines, they broke the fence down. The SD1 was working, continued to work past that point, because I was on the threat of closure, of course, at that time. So they was able to get into the gates. Although we got pickets up there, we was allowing the SD1 through. And of course, they came in the cars, and we couldn't control that. There was no way of distinguishing what was an SD1 worker and what was a Land Rover. That's not why I obviously knew a fair amount of
it. Yes, yes.
And we picketed the plant, I think, pretty successfully. Company indicated there was 1,000 working. There was no way there was 1,000 working. Might have been a couple of hundred. But they couldn't do much.
No.
They couldn't do much. No. Basically, that was mainly sitting down. And of course, when it was made official, that turned the tide. And even the faint hearts had to recognise the official label that was placed on the dispute. And they came out then, so we effectively had a plant on complete stop.
I don't understand really why the SD1 worked.
That sort of created a lot of resentment in the people that stood on the picket lines. And one has to say, well, there's got to be a discipline within an organisation.
Yes.
There has to be that. In any organisation, there is a disciplinary conduct.
Mm.
Now, people had taken part in a vote and had voted by majority decision overwhelmingly to strike. And so it's reasonable to expect that people would adhere to that.
Yes.
Not unreasonable to expect that. I mean, if we don't accept that, then we've all got the right to march down to Downing Street and to dispose of Margaret Thatcher if we don't accept a majority decision. So it was reasonable to expect, and it was reasonable to expect that those people who had offended the working rule would be dealt with properly in accordance with union rule. Now, they was branched.
Hmm.
They wasn't branched out of, at least from my point of view, and to anything other than that they would have to answer for their actions by crossing a picket line. To the branch, not to me, or to the Works Committee, but to the branch.
Yes.
And the branch is made up of the average person.
Yes.
He had the right to go. He had the right to put his side of the case. He had the right to put any facts or figures or details that he so wished prior to a decision being taken. Even when a decision was taken to branch the man and to fine him an amount of money. Even then he had the right of appeal to region, which one or two did. So I can't think in my mind what more democratic way you can discipline people.
Yes.
So although the papers got on the bandwagon and try to create it into some sort of witch hunt. It was not a witch hunt. It was just asking people. You took part in the vote. Why didn't you abide by that vote?
Mm.
Would you expect us to abide by a vote which went the other way? Would you expect us to go on strike even though the meeting had voted to work?
Yes. Yes,
and I think they was obligated to give reasons to those people that had supported the strike.
Another question is why did the SD1 not support that?
Well,
I still don't understand. Was the organisation already split then?
Yes, we had split the organisation. I'm just backtracking now.
Yes.
Going back a bit. Yeah. They, at that time, had split as an organisation, although we still had links, of course, we kept in touch. But they was part of the car side, because we did have this...
Yes.
This difference.
Yes.
Existing between the cars and the Land Rover. Each individual plant, of course, had their own mass meetings.
Yes.
SD1's decision was to work at that time. The initial meeting was to work. When the official label was put onto the dispute, And many people was looking to that.
Yes.
Was not prepared to do anything until the union made it official. Once it was made official, I was prepared to move. But I was not prepared to move, possibly because people always tried to class that as an unofficial strike, which was not true. There was no way a strike carried out like in that manner was unofficial. And it's really just a formality for the union to recognise that as an official dispute. I'm sure you understand that. It's just a question of applying. So that they waited, really, or their response was to wait for an official action, which came a few days later. I was in another meeting, and of course they came out on strike, which effectively shut this plant completely. We then amalgamated, because we'd formed our own strike committee, which to coordinate the picketing and everything, and they joined us on that committee. And of course joined us in our efforts to try and get other plants to take issue with the company.
Now, a year later, when the SD1 had its sort of big meeting about what to do about the closure, the Land Rover didn't support them. I mean, they did support them in words, but they didn't come out.
Well, there's a lot of rubbish spoke about that.
Yes.
See, essentially, there's one thing. If you're asking people to support you, then you yourself must be prepared to take action. That's very important. SD1 at that time was taking action in a number of different directions. There was not a straight stoppage of work.
No, that's true.
They was making approaches to MPs, to local councillors, to really anybody at that time. And they organised certain functions. We invited their convener, Mick Clark, to come and address the shop steward. And there was a moral support vote given to the SD1, and that we would effectively impose whatever restrictions, practices that we could, in order to assist them.
Mm.
And they had the right to come and ask us. They never did. They only asked us to do one thing, and that was to support the march. The Land Rover shop stewards decided to support that march. And we march from here to Solihull to the councillors. We went on that march and we listened to the various speakers that was at Solihull. After the march, then we came back. Then the SD1 went to a mass meeting and accepted the closure and the closure terms. There was little that we could do at that time. There was little more we could have done during the time. Because with the SD1 still continuing to work, but take certain actions, all you could do was participate in those actions that they were taking, that they had organised and was trying to implement a reversal in the decision. So we did all that we could. Realistically, we did all that we could.
Yes.
It wouldn't have helped SD1 to have Land Rover on strike while SD1 was continuing to work. It wouldn't have helped them.
No.
And it was something that I don't think we could have held or got. Because nobody's going to come out on strike whilst the people who are trying to defend are working.
No. But I was thinking, you know, particularly sort of on the day of the march, that I think the SD1 leadership anyway felt very disappointed that it was just the shop stewards of the Land Rover rather than a sort of massive support from Land Rover workers in terms of, you know, turning up or just closing down the place or whatever, or stopping for an hour, or, you know, there are always various actions you can take. Wasn't there enough support, concern, you think, among the Land Rover shop floor with it, or?
There always is certain confrontations between groups of workers.
Yes.
And you always get the position, well, they didn't support us when we did this.
Yes.
Get that kind of thing happening. So whether or not we could have got the support, I wouldn't like to say. I would like to think that we could have done.
Yes.
I think putting the right way, we would have done.
Yes.
But one has to ask yourself at the time of any request is what is the best possible approach to it at that time. And after the debate, it was felt that the shop stewards in block would have indicated to management and to anybody that we was totally dedicated to try and prevent the closure of SD1. We as a union totally dedicated to that task, and that if we had to call on the shop floor to take some strong measures, then we would be prepared to do so. We was indicating our willingness to support, and therefore to a degree committing the shop floor to an action which might take place in the future if called on to do so. That's the way we looked at it at that time. And it was effective, because many of the management here was extremely worried. Very worried. Because if you think there was natural resentment or restrictions between worker to worker, there was far more existed between management and management. Far more than whatever that existed on the shop floor. And that at that time was the reasons why we went for shop stewards. We was committing the workforce.
Right.
By our actions.
Right. I think Joe...
Yes, I think...